The Parisians strive to enjoy each day. The French in general do, but especially the Parisians.
This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
Take one part fantasy, two parts solo travel, a healthy pour of people watching, two dashes of affordable luxury, shake vigorously, and strain over Paris adventure. This is the recipe for glorious evening elegance in Paris, the lovely and divine lounges you can find on your next Paris visit. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. Your solo travel advisor, Astrid Clements, wants you to know about some of the best bars in the City of Lights. A votre santé!
Well, I want to start this show with really a personal story, which I think will help explain why I wanted to devote a show on Paris bars and lounges that basically geared to the solo traveler. Briefly, when I grew up in a family where both of my parents did not drink at all.
In Louisiana?
Yes. So I had no influence on me that drinking was okay. In fact, my parents' point of view was it was expensive and a dangerous habit that should be avoided. I didn't drink in high school or even in college. And I must say, I had a great time and I was popular. It wasn't like, you know, I was happy without drinking or going to bars. That was my early, I guess you would say, socialization to drinking. Nothing. Well, then my attitude began to change when I met and married my husband in the late 70s. Now, my husband is a sophisticated, worldly man. He's an architect, developer by profession. He's really the type of man who enjoys a very nice drink or a glass of wine or two in an elegant bar. So basically, bottom line, he carried me over the threshold of my bar and alcohol prejudice and fear. And he really did introduce me to that finer kind of activity in life. We were lucky, and he was an architect developer who did work all over the world. So we got to travel a lot. He loves great hotels, and he really doesn't stay in anything that's really nice, that's not really nice, or he won't go. He's not willing to sacrifice on quality. He's just like that. He doesn't blow money or anything like that, but he's very quality oriented. I went to a lot of great hotels and great bars. So this was basically my education on how enjoyable it is to have a drink or two in an elegant bar. So he was the one that really showed me this whole new world and that it was something to be enjoyed. Then I must say in the late 70s, really up until 2000, you would rarely see a lone woman in a bar or even a group of women in nice bars because the women that were doing that were usually looking for a rendezvous. But then in the early 2000, when women started traveling more for business, there was more solo travel by women because they were more independent. They were more financially independent. So the stigma of an unaccompanied woman in a bar really began to fade. Now, to enjoy a fabulous drink in a fabulous bar in Paris is really not to be missed when traveling solo, even if you don't drink. Have a virgin cocktail, because these places are fabulous. They're a great setting to meet interesting and sophisticated people, whether they're in groups or they're solo. You know, the people in Paris who patronize these best lounges are 99% well-educated, successful, well-mannered, and they are people who enjoy the finer things in life. It's basically a great pleasure to go into one of these wonderful bars and have a nice glass of wine or champagne or cognac, which they do, the Parisians do, in these bars because they really are highly civilized. And they're all very well managed. Unsavory behavior is not tolerated in these types of establishment. Bottom line is, in my opinion, Paris really has the most elegant bars in the world. And on this show today, I'm going to highlight five of the ones that I think are the most elegant and why they're so special and they're not to be missed. All of these great lounges have a special mystique, which I think it comes from a couple of or combination of a few things. First of all, the distinctive settings. They all have a distinctive setting. All of these great lounges have longevity. They have a history of being what I call the it lounge. They're not, you know, 5 years old or whatever. They have a long history. They have famous or renowned bartenders or head barmen. I mean, now they've become like celebrity chefs. They're celebrity bartenders. Extremely high quality and discerning cocktail, champagne, aperitif, port, cognac, and wine menus. Their menus at these bars are fabulous. I mean, they're in itself a collector's item to see all these rare cognacs and wines, etc., that you can get there, or these really rare cocktails that they make. It's very interesting for starters, the whole what goes into these fabulous lounges. Music, some have music and some don't. But if the music is there, it's typically very low, kind of easy music, whether it's piano or some type of jazz, can have a singer. But it's not, you know, anything loud or boisterous or get up and dance. There's no dancing in these bars or these lounges. This is a real classic lounge type of environment. Well-mannered, well-dressed, sophisticated clientele. I mean, you're not going to see people in blue jeans, trainers, backpacks. The Parisians really are picky about the way you dress. And in these very fine lounges, that's very important. They will not let you in if you're not nicely dressed. And last, they all really do have good energy. Like I was talking about, they have that relaxed, comfortable ambiance, even though they are gorgeous and very refined. That, to me, makes them very special. So, key words to describe a great lounge in Paris: elegant and sophisticated setting and crowd, warm, comfortable ambiance, top-of-the-line cocktails, wine, champagne menus, high-minded conversation and interaction between the patrons. I mean, it is just, it's really, it's sophisticated, and it's very, it's cool.
Yeah. It sounds good.
Well, it's cool.
Let's talk about some of these places that you have mentioned, the five that you set aside for us.
Okay. First of all, I mean, there are more fabulous lounges in Paris than these five, but I have chosen these five because I've been to all of them, and they all are in fabulous hotels. And typically, I like to personally, because I'm a solo traveler, like to go into bars that are in hotels. They seem to be what I considered, the management is better. For the solo traveler, typically I think they are a better, I don't want to say they're safer, but there is an element that they're cocooned in a hotel. So I think they probably really are much safer.
They might be just more geared to having people who are solo, right? Is that what you're kind of getting at? Or
yes. I don't know about that, but I think they're more geared to being a nice place to be and more hospitable rather than somewhere where there are all kinds of reasons why people are going in there. I mean, people who go into real nice lounges in very fine hotels, they really want to just relax, maybe have some conversation with some fellow travelers before they go up to their room, etc. And they're typically not neighborhood bars, per se, unless there's something very special about them. But then they're not the type where, you know, you've got a party going on. It's not a party kind of atmosphere in this type of lounge, okay? So I chose five Parisian lounges, two of which are in what's called a Palace Hotel. Two are in an ultra-luxury 5-star hotels that I think should be Palace Hotels. And then another one was in the hotel that I recently stayed in when I was in Paris. And before I go into it, I want to explain a little bit about what a Palace Hotel is. A Palace Hotel, the designation is basically better than 5-star. It is creme de la creme. It's the very best among the top hotels in France, and it's actually a designation given by the French Ministry of Tourism. Paris has more of them than anywhere in France. They typically have a Michelin star restaurant or two in the hotel. They have some type of historic heritage, so they're not a brand new hotel. Prime real estate location. I mean, they have the best locations. They usually have some kind of fabulous branded spa. Spas are very important in these hotels. The staff is so well trained. I read this one article that some of them put their staff through posture classes. I mean, they have to learn how to walk, learn how to talk, all kinds of different. I mean, it's hard.
It's like finishing school.
Yes, 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 absolutely. And they. Have you ever gone to a hotel when you walk up and they say, well, hello, Mrs. Clements, how are you doing? You go, well, how do you know who I am? I've never been here before. They research who you are. They know what you look like. They know a lot of stuff about you before you even come. They try to know your likes and dislikes. Some of the hotels monogram your pillow.
Come on.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. So what I'm saying is you get my drift.
Wow.
The bars in the two Palace Hotels I'll highlight are the Georges the Cinq Bar in the Georges the Cinq Hotel, which is a Four Seasons hotel, and then the Le Bar 228 in the Hotel Le Maurice, which is part of the Dorchester Collection. The two other bars that are in hotels that I really think should have the Palace designation, but they just both went through big renovations. The Hotel Ritz on Place Vendôme went through a $450 million renovation, closed for 4 years. Now, you would think this hotel has a Palace designation. I think they just haven't been awarded it yet since the renovation. Likewise, the Hotel Le Crillon, which is right there on Place de la Concorde, such a famous hotel. Both of those, the Hemingway Bar and the Ritz Hotel, I'm going to review that, and then the Le Bar Le Ambassadeur in the Hotel Crillon is the fourth one. And then the English Bar at the Hotel Regina, which the Hotel Regina is a 5-star hotel, and it is part of the preferred hotel groups. And this was the hotel that I stayed in on my last visit, and I loved the Hotel Regina, and I loved their beautiful bar. Okay, let's start with the Georges the Cinq bar in the Palace Hotel, in the Georges the Cinq Hotel. And I went to it. It was actually the first lounge that I decided to go to. And what I like to do when I am traveling solo, I like to go to some of these really fabulous hotels that are $1,000, $1,200, you know, a night, to either have a drink or have a glass of wine or have tea or eat, you know, lunch in the Michelin restaurant. I mean, I want to go and see these fabulous places without actually staying there. Sometimes I'll even go to the spas there. I blog, and I like to see what's going on. I like to see what's new. I like to see the best of the best. So this is kind of the way I manage or budget going into some of the more rarefied places. But so I had been shopping on the Avenue Montaigne, which is one of the most fabulous shopping streets in Paris and in the world. I mean, Givenchy, Dior, Louis Vuitton, all of them are on the street in fabulous restaurants. This street is so famous. I always walk down the street. If I don't do anything, I wouldn't shop. But on my last trip, I did buy a few things, which I love. This street is just great. Well, I decided that I did not want to go right back to my hotel after the stores had closed. And the Georges the Cinq was on my way, my walk back to Rue Rivoli, where my hotel was. And so I decided I was going to go into their bar. Well, I went in the lobby, and the Christmas decorations were just unbelievable. And they're very well known for their flowers in the Georges the Cinq. They supposedly they have $1 million a year or some. Oh, yeah, they have some very famous florist that does all the flowers. And whew, it is. They're all works of art. Well, I had to wait 30 minutes before I could get in. And that is a tip. If you want to go to these lounges that I'm telling you about, it's probably smarter to have your concierge reserve you a seat or somewhere that you can go in, because they're hard to get into. And if you're not staying in the hotel, they really don't like foot traffic to come in there unless they know you. You know, if you're a regular, it doesn't make any difference. Well, I was nicely dressed, and so I was happy to wait because I really did want to go. Once I got to sit down and walked into the bar, it was beautiful. It was kind of on the small side. It wasn't that big. Beautiful wood paneling all around, kind of like a library. It had a fireplace. Over the fireplace was a oil painting of Georges the Cinq or George the Fifth. Beautiful velvet couches and chairs, small tables, you know, that are in France. You have all of these little petite tables, you know, where two people can come or one. And if you're in a group, they put them all together. But a nice small bar with, you know, a couple of bar stools. But it really had an intimate feel about it. Bartender. Famous bartender, Georges Hazac. And he is noted for the perfect pour. He designed the glasses that they serve the cocktails in. And especially the long glass. It's, I don't know, it's just perfect, supposedly, with the amount of ounces and the diameter and the whole thing in terms of how much you really should drink per long drink. But you can go on the internet and you can actually YouTube and learn all about him. He gives classes, etc. So he is very famous. So when I went there, because it was supper time, I decided I wanted to have something to eat too. So I ended up ordering a club sandwich with a salad. And I asked the bartender, would he suggest a drink? Because a lot of the bartenders like to do this. And he said, well, if you're going to have a club sandwich, I suggest the jailbreak. I said, okay, what's in it?
And tell me
said,
more.
He said, Bombay Sapphire Gin, Chambord, fresh lime juice, ginger ale with a little mint. And I must say, it hit the spot. I had two. But I can tell you, it is expensive. My bar, the whole tab was $50 for the club sandwich, $35 a piece for the drink. So that's $70 for the drink. So that's $120 for two drinks and a club sandwich.
Oh my gosh.
Then with the tip, it was almost $150. So I want to tell you,
wow,
these fabulous bars are expensive. So be prepared. But let me tell you, in my book, you only live once. And even if that's the only one you go to, it's wonderful, because I tell you, there is a feeling in there that, oh my gosh, life is just there for you to, you know,
enjoy
and savor. Mm. Yes. And it really, it was great. I mean, I loved it. So I thought, you know, I'm going to check out the other really good bars and lounges in Paris this time. I'd been to a few of them, but I kind of made it a point because that was just such a wonderful experience. So I decided that I would eat my good meals at lunch so I would have money to go to these bars at night. If you want to experience what I call an iconic, elegant bar that's actually frequented by locals as well as hotel guests and some tourists, the bar at the Georges the Cinq really, I think, is the one, because it is kind of like a high-class neighborhood bar. You know, I mean, don't be surprised if some fashion designer walks in there, or, you know, they're noted politician, etc. It's just a place where, I mean, it's in a great area of Paris, so there are very sophisticated people that live in the area, and they come there to have a drink. So that's a great experience. Just get ready to pull out that credit card. Okay. Then right down the street, the second bar that I'm going to talk about, or lounge, right down the street from my hotel on the Rue de Rivoli, is the fabulous Le Maurice Hotel. I mean, this hotel is, I don't know if it's the most famous hotel in Paris, but it's right up there with the Ritz and Plaza Athénée. I mean, it is really, really opulent. They have a famous bar called it's called Le Bar 228, because the address on the Rue de Rivoli of the Le Maurice is 228, and that address is very chichi. Because it was only 5 minutes from my hotel, I decided I had gone to a show an evening performance. So much fun, and I laughed my head off. I said, I'm going to go to the Maurice to shut this night down. So I had the taxi drive me to the Maurice, and I went in there. Didn't have to wait very long. And here again, I must stress, if you want to go in these lounges, be nicely dressed. You don't have to be in cocktail attire, but be nicely dressed, because you will not get in. I went into the lobby, and oh my God, this hotel is so opulent. It really is something else. And you walk through, you actually have to walk through one part of the Dolly restaurant, and then, you know, you go into the bar. But the bar is pretty formal. It is what I consider empire style. Now, it, like the Georges the Cinq, had the wood paneling, but this wood paneling had gold accents in it, in like, you know, half columns and this kind of thing. Very much more formal than the Georges the Cinq, which was really like a library. They had several Lavalle frescoes, which are paintings on the wall of scenes from the Chateau Fontainebleau. And this bar was actually called the Chateau Fontainebleau when it first opened in 1937. But the Fontainebleau Chateau is just a gorgeous old chateau near Versailles that, you know, they used to hunt and everything. And so these frescoes are just fabulous because they set the tone for this elegant, real old world French refined setting. Beautiful. All the couches and the chairs are all covered in leather. You know, some of the bars I've found that either have velvet or they have leather. Except one had something else, and I'll tell you about that. But all the fabrics of the coverings of the furniture are all fabulous. And a lot of them have still antique furniture. Dim lighting. They had some piano music. They sat me in the corner, so it was just perfect. I could people watch. And if you like to people watch, this is a people watching place. Because this hotel, crown heads of state, movie stars, rock stars, the beautiful people, they really stay here. Because this hotel is extremely expensive. So they come, even if they are not staying here, say they're staying at Plaza Athenee or Georges V, they'll come over to the Le Maurice and have a drink at the Le Bar 228, because it has that, you know, it's like you can't go to Paris without at least having one drink there if you're one of these, you know, really
high flyers,
VIPs. But with all this, it still had that warm, comfortable feel. So I'd kind of say it's refined but cozy. And it's really a place where a solo traveler could relax and have a drink and feel comfortable even though he or she is alone. And like the other bars that I'm going to highlight, this bar has a great head barman. In fact, he's been there 40 years. Now, can you believe? I mean, that tells you, like all these bars really do, except maybe one, have a lot of longevity about them. But this one, in terms of being the bartender for 40 years, that's something else. His name is William Oliveri, and he's famous for creating the best Bellini in the world. He is actually from Italy, from Sicily, and he took the famous Bellini that was created for the Hotel Cipriani or Harry's Bar. I don't know which one, but it's when you go to Venice, you have to have a Bellini, and it's basically a peach liqueur based drink with, in Italy, with Prosecco and something else in it, I think. But he refined it and uses champagne in it, and everybody just, it's a to-die-for drink. His goal is he wants every customer to wish to return. And I tell you, this bar is so one of a kind, it's hard not to really hope you have the opportunity to return. But I decided to basically have a glass of Cabernet, just a good French Cabernet. The waiter who was dressed in a tux, I asked him, I said, look, you just, you know, whatever you recommend, this is what I want. So he brought me wonderful glass of Cabernet. I could have never picked that right one, but you know, they know what they're doing. I mean, like to the 10th degree. But, and he brought me some bar snacks, and I sat there for an hour, just happy as I could be. Just, you know, I thought, you know, this is like a fantasy come true. You know, I'm so lucky to be alive. I mean, that's how I felt in this place. I mean, I had the opportunity to go there. I know that sounds kind of childish or trite or whatever, but this is like opulence, refinement, and perfection all wrapped up together. And when you're by yourself, you don't have your husband. My husband doesn't like to travel anymore, so that's why he's not with me. But I still like to do this. He brought me over the threshold, so now I do like to have a glass of wine or two before I go to bed, or a drink or whatever, and I don't want to do it in my room. This place, it does not get any better than this in terms of real refinement. So I was just sitting there, and I was just like, in real heaven. But I did not order anything to eat, but they have great salads there. They're known for their salads, their sandwiches. They have light plates, and on top of it, if you don't feel like having any alcohol, of course you can get coffee, tea, whatever. And the desserts that are offered on the menu are prepared by Cedric Grolet. And I don't know if any of my listeners know who he is, but he was awarded the best pastry chef in the world in 2017. And the desserts he make are, they're fantasy desserts. They're like, you cannot believe the artistry in what he creates. And then the tastes and just everything. They are just like out of this world. So, I'm trying to paint the picture of how fabulous this place is. So, as you can imagine, my glass of wine was costly, $50. But to be at one of the centers of Parisian glamour, you know, I found it really affordable for this kind of an experience, really. And you know, people describe, I'll just kind of you know, wrap up this bar. They described the Le Bar 228 as the essence and beauty of French culture. Pure Paris. Yes, Mr. Oliveri, I hope I do return one day. And then when I do, I'm going to order Bellini this time. But the experience, bottom line, you want to return. You want to have that good fortune to be able to return there, because it is really, really as good as it gets.
I'm imagining, for regular listeners who know how you budget, I love imagining that you're pulling all of these out of the food budget line and putting it in the experience line.
I am. Well, when I got, well, after that, you know, club sandwich and two drinks sent back for almost $150, I'd say, oh, I was going to cut into a little bit of my shopping here if this keeps going on. Okay. Now
That's only two.
There are three more, and they're all great.
Yeah.
They're all great. Okay. The third one is the Hemingway Bar that's in the Hotel Ritz. Now, this bar is what's considered a museum bar. And I had been to it before when I went on a trip in 2006. And I loved it. And so I had taken a Coco Chanel walking tour, and the last stop on the tour was at the Hotel Ritz. And the last time I had been to Paris, the Ritz was going on through the renovation, so I couldn't go. But because of this was the last stop, and, you know, that's where Coco Chanel basically lived for a lot of her life, I thought, well, I'll just go have a drink in the Hemingway Bar, and then I'll walk back to the hotel, because it wasn't too far from the Rue de Rivoli either. The Hemingway Bar, I mean, as I said, this bar really is considered a museum bar for a lot of reasons. First of all, the clientele that have frequented this bar through the years have made it that way. I mean, Ernest Hemingway spent every night there for many nights before and after World War II. He shared a lot of time with friends such as F. Scott Fitzgerald, the other writer. I mean, you know, he would stay in there all day long. I mean, he bought people drinks. This was his spot. Cole Porter, the famous composer, he loved the Hemingway Bar. I mean, he'd stay there sometimes 9 hours, and supposedly he composed or wrote Begin the Beguine there. Coco Chanel, I mean, she hung out there. I mean, the real, I guess you would say, the the heady, arty, classy Parisians had drinks at the Hemingway bar. So that in itself, the people that have come through those doors and really spent time there and enjoyed camaraderie there, it's different than the Le Maurice or the Georges the Cinq. This is, you know, this is a place where you can just feel the history when you walk in there. On top of that, it's decorated, or the interior have all these old antique photographs of Hemingway and F. Scott Fitzgerald and various people who've been there. They have game heads on the wall and shark's teeth, or, you know, big game fishing, which Hemingway liked to do. Old typewriters. And even when they did the renovation, which everybody was scared of, that it would change. Oh, no, they left all of that same, even the same type of leather chairs and couches. They didn't change it. They changed a little bit of the lighting, but that was the only thing. They left it like that. So it really is. It has not changed and you know, since World War II or whatever. It's what I considered historic, or they call it a museum bar. Elton John loves to go there. You know, Audrey Hepburn in the past, this was one of her favorite places. Beyonce, I mean, you know, J-Lo, Karl Lagerfeld. I mean, unfortunately, Princess Diana, you know, that was one of her last nights, was there at the Ritz. She went there because her boyfriend's father owned it. But it definitely has a mystique when you walk in there. So, and I sensed it the first time I was there. I thought, you know, here again, I made it here too. but it is really cool. Barman, the bar head bartender or the head barman, his name is Colin Field. Now, let me tell you, he's touted as the best bartender in the world. I mean, the world's best bartender, and he is out of sight. I mean, first of all, he has a fabulous personality. He is just, he's very intuitive, and he has great energy. He's been here since 1994, and his reputation and professionalism really, he's legendary. And what's so interesting is, ironically, he has a literature background. His studies was in literature.
And how ironic that, yes, he would end up at the Hemingway bar.
Yes.
Wow.
But he ended up gravitating towards bartending. And I think I read a little bit about him. I think he kind of did bartending to earn money while he was studying. But then he liked it so much, and he ended up, you know, really getting active in it. He became part of, like, the school of bartending. He teaches classes. They have, like, bartending diplomas in France that you go through 3 years of this apprenticeship, etc. And he is really big in bartending and knowing everything about what you're drinking. I mean, he prides himself in knowing everything about every wine, the grapes, what the weather was like, the soil, how much it rained. I mean, he knows everything about the wines, about the cognacs, about the, you know, the different liqueurs, the different techniques of how making the new cocktails. I mean, he's like a scientist as well as a professor, really, in alcohol. I mean, it's amazing what he carries around in terms of his knowledge. But that's very important to him. You can't just know how to make drinks. You have to understand what makes all of these different types of liquors, liqueurs, wine, champagnes, what makes them average, good, great, and completely out of this universe. And he is the man. I mean, he really does. He knows that. So, first of all, one of the reasons why he's considered the world's greatest bartender is because he knows everything about everything when it comes to alcohol. But also, his reputation for his personal philosophies and how they relate to the clients that come into the bar Hemingway. I mean, you can watch a lot of YouTube videos on him. They've done a lot of videos about what he believes, how he serves his clients, you know, how he makes his drinks. You know, he does cocktail classes. He goes all over the world. But he has such a vibrant personality. But it is so real, and it comes from the heart, and it comes from demanding excellence in himself at everything he does and how he interacts with clients and the alcohol and the wines, etc. That's why it's so extraordinary. That's why people go to the Bar Hemingway just to be in his presence, much less drink one of his cocktails. But some of his philosophies, I'll just go into a little bit because it paints a picture. He says a person doesn't come into a bar because he's thirsty. He comes into a bar to relax, to have a wonderful drink. You know, he really does want to have something that is wonderful, and he wants to relax. He said most of his clients, they do come in asking for recommendations because he's famous for this. And what he does, he will observe them before he decides what he wants to make for them. He'll start a conversation with him, and he's the greatest conversationalist. He can talk to, you know, the wall, and the wall will talk back. But he, you know, he begins a conversation and observes his client, and then he decides what he wants to make for them. And one of his biggest bangs is for them to just absolutely go crazy over what he has created, specially for them. It could be already a cocktail that he knows, or it could be something that he's made totally off the cuff. I mean, that is just to have that experience is like, you know, going to the best hairdresser in Paris to have them, he or she cut your hair. You know, I mean, there's just, you know, it's just the top. He just gets the biggest bang out of creating the perfect drink for his customers. Then he also says the bartender must really like people. He must love his clients and love what he does. And he, when he teaches in his classes or he mentors anybody, I mean, this is big. And if they don't have that, if they're just there making drinks and kind of making small talk, but they're not really engaging with the customer, bad. Will be a bad bar. There'll be bad vibes. So he's big on that. Then he's also big on you have to make your drinks with care. He says the more respect you put in a cocktail when making it, the better the cocktail. When he pours champagne, he pours it with three fingers. He doesn't take the champagne bottle and grab it and pour it. He places it on three fingers and slowly pours it a certain way. I mean, let me tell you, this is something else to be in his presence. He loves when the clients just, you know, really enjoy what he's doing, the drinks that they're having, etc. Now, his most popular drink is, and his signature drink is called Serendipity. So if you get the opportunity to go and you want his most popular drink, order the Serendipity. And he calls this France in a glass. This is Calvados, which if you've never drank Calvados, it's kind of like a sparkling apple wine, or it's made from apples. And let me tell you something, I will warn you. I went to a very fancy dinner with a friend of mine in Brittany. And I mean, this was a fancy dinner, and they served Calvados. And I thought, oh, this tastes so good. You know, I mean, I had never tasted Calvados. Whoa, Calvados will knock you on your behind quickly. So I just tell you, don't think Calvados, because it kind of tastes like apples, is not to be respected. But he makes this with Calvados, apple juice, champagne, and mint. He shakes it on ice. People love it. They go crazy over it. He also is noted for the driest martini in the world. He calls this the vodka-tini. So if you want the driest martini, order the vodka-tini. Now, if you want the most expensive cocktail in the world,
oh, Lord,
order the Ritz Sidecar. This one is made from, I think it's called Cointreau, lemon juice, an extraordinarily rare cognac. It has to be before 1972. Price tag, $1,750 for one drink. But let me tell you, this drink, he got it put in the Guinness Book of Records. So, if you want that memory from the world's best bartender in this famous bar, you can have it at the Bar Hemingway, or the Hemingway Bar. You can't have a more memorable lounge experience than going into the Hemingway Bar. I mean, it's not as fancy as, you know, the Le Maurice or the Le Bar 228 at the Le Maurice. And it's not quite as, it doesn't have quite the elegant feeling of the neighborhood bar at the Georges V. But let me tell you, it doesn't get any better for the whole experience. And really, he is a bartender extraordinaire. That place has a vibe like, I mean, you'll never forget it. And actually, I had been there before, and I went there with my son. I remember, I didn't know what to order then. We were hungry, so we got sliders. My son orders a Crown and Coke. I don't know what I can't remember what I ordered. But we had a great time, and my son still talks about it. I mean, he would love to be able to make enough money to where he thought he could afford to go in there and have drinks. But it's a great place. And if you're in Paris and you want to go to one of the best lounges in the world, Go to the Hemingway Bar. It's great. Okay, the next bar that
number four.
Number four is a bar called the Le Bar Les Ambassadors, and it's in the Le Hotel Crillon, located at the Place de la Concorde, and this hotel is actually known as the Queen of Paris, and it's owned by a very wealthy Saudi prince, who put this hotel also through $120 million renovation. And he took this historic hotel and you know, kind of gave it a little bit of a modern twist, but kept the luxury without ostentation. So he took this historic hotel and did give it some modern touches in the decor, and through all kinds of elements within the hotel. So the bar, I think this particular lounge is more geared toward the international jet setter. It's probably even a little bit of a younger crowd, still very she-she. The bones of the room are classic French. I mean, these walls are not oak. They're marble. And they have towering ceilings. And on the ceilings is beautiful sky with clouds, humongous chandeliers. So the bones of the space are classic. Then you've got this modern piece of sculpture in the middle of the bar. you have this low, free-flowing couches and chairs. They're covered with 1,000-count thread, raw, I think, Japanese silk.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. And it's more monochromatic in here. The beautiful marble in the walls are this kind of pink tones and okra tones and everything. And then there's some also multicolored marble in different areas. And then the sky color on the ceiling. That's where most of the color is and on the floor. But the furnishings and everything's very monochromatic. So it's got that kind of modern feel to it, low slung. This particular bar had a singer and a pianist. And she was very sultry, young, singing romantic kind of sultry songs. But it was really, So this bar, like I said, this was kind of a young jet-setter bar, but there were also older people in there. I wanted to just have a glass of wine. I had a French white burgundy, which was delicious. And I only stayed for an hour. The music, she was a great singer. And I did enjoy it. I think it's fabulous. I didn't like it maybe quite as much as the others because I'm older. But I still liked it because it was very refined in a more modern way. Likewise, they have their director of bar, their head barman. He is young. I mean, he's probably in his early 30s. His name is Jan Daniel. And what this particular bar is noted for are their very rare champagnes. And they're really fabulous caviar. So if you want rare champagne and the best of the best caviar, this Le Bar des Ambassadeurs is where you should go. So, here again, it's a lounge. There's no dancing or anything like that, but it has more of a jet setter feel. It's not quite as like quiet and understated in the atmosphere, but likewise, it's not any place where a solo traveler would feel uncomfortable because people, you know, it's expensive in there too. So you're not going to have anybody acting up. And if this is the thing in those places, if people are getting a little bit, they've had a little bit too much to drink, or maybe they're being a little too forward, or the bartenders and the attendants, so they are trained to see that, and they know how to handle
they're
it.
They're alert to that.
Oh, yeah, they know how to handle it. They deal with the situation properly. Okay, the last one. I know this is long, but every one of them, of these bars, these lounges, are wonderful, and I do want the solo traveler to consider going to one, two, or maybe all of them just to experience this one-of-a-kind place with fabulous, wines or alcohols. So the last one is the English Bar, and the English Bar is in the Hotel Regina, which is the hotel that I stayed in on my last visit. It's a 5-star historic hotel right across the street from the Louvre. Beautifully, decor is beautiful, old world Parisian, but the whole hotel was completely renovated in 2015. But they kept the Parisian elegance to it. The bar, all wood, even wood on the ceiling, gorgeous oak, gorgeous light beige marble floor with the little black squares, you know, every so often. The seating area in this English bar, they have, I think, 5 or 6 seating areas. Each one has an oriental rug that's different from the others on this gorgeous marble floor. The furniture, I mean, every time I think about this bar with this furniture, and it's really to die for. It's this French furniture that has an oak frame with this dark maroon velvet. Every piece of furniture in this bar is covered with this beautiful, wonderful, expensive velvet. The chairs, they're done in pairs. They're all different styles. So you have this eclectic style of beautiful antique French chairs and settees, all elegantly arranged in this warm, oak-filled room. It is just beautiful. The bar is at the very end. There are two bartenders dressed in tux. They can make you any drink that you want. The menu is very nice. It's not extensive like the other ones, but in terms of very good French wines and champagnes and cognacs, the menu is good. Then they also have certain craft cocktails, and they can make anything that they want. But the feeling in this bar is wonderful. And the nights that I hadn't gone to one of these super expensive bars, I went to the English bar in my hotel. And my hotel was what I consider affordable luxury. So the glasses of wine and the drinks were considerably less, but still very high quality. And the environment and the vibe in the room was great. I felt like an aristocrat sitting in there. Very comfortable. And another thing about this particular bar, like the Georges the Cinq, there were people, Parisians, in there. So I knew this bar was not only for hotel guests, but Parisians like to meet their friends there or be solo there and just have a drink. Wonderful. I mean, I enjoyed very much going in there, writing in my journal, deciding what I was going to do in the next day. But this bar is enough to make you book a room at the Hotel Regina. But let me tell you something. Everything about the Hotel Regina is absolutely like the bar. Very, very refined, very comfortable, very Parisian, but not passé. So, I mean, I would really highly recommend even going to this bar if you're in the area. Say you don't stay at one of these fabulous hotels and you don't want to spend quite as much money, go to the English bar at the Hotel Regina. It is just, I mean, you sit in there and you're thinking, oh my gosh, it doesn't get any better than this. Even though it's not quite as on the fantastic level, it is still perfect. Those are the five bars that I think that if you're going to Paris as a solo traveler, I would suggest you patronize at least one of them. And I think you'll probably have the same experience that I'm sharing with you.
It sounds so cool. It sounds so fun.
It is really cool. Yeah. You know, even if you only do it once in your life,
yeah,
it's worth it. I mean, you'll never forget it.
Just to wrap everything, kind of pull everything together here at the close, what do you think that the Paris Lounge experience can tell us about the city itself or about the experiencing a place like Paris?
Okay, well, the French have a philosophy, which a lot of people have heard, of joie de vivre, or life is made to basically be enjoyed. And really, to live in Paris, the Parisians strive to enjoy each day. The French in general do, but especially the Parisians. You know, the culture is very quality-oriented. I find the people very high-minded, well-mannered, very civilized. You know, they value being well-educated and sophisticated, but not sophisticated to the point where, you know, I mean, they can be kind of condescending, but they, when you get to know them, and if you're kind of on their same level or their wavelength, They're very warm, you know. So this is going to a bar. You really do get this consciousness. And the French women, they're confident women. They're stylish. They're independent, and they're known for being fearless. So, I mean, they go into these wonderful places, and they're not in there looking for a rendezvous. They're in there because they want to be in this beautiful space, having the best of the best, and then going about the rest of their evening. So, you know, and it happens in places like this, and especially if you want to get on a really, really high level. So when you treat yourself to a cocktail, glass of wine, glass of champagne, and an elegant bar, you experience what the French pride themselves in, basically what they consider the art of living. And it's really true. You when you do this, you'll get it. It's right there in front of you, especially if you don't do it. You'll think, oh gosh, this is the way life should be. So I encourage people who are traveling solo to Paris to not avoid patronizing a bar or a lounge, but to pick a great one.
Yeah.
Or to stay in a hotel that has a great one, or a wonderful bar. And here again, I do highly recommend the Hotel Regina. It's 5-star. I consider it affordable luxury. It's not too expensive, but it's very elegant Parisian. Don't let your fear of feeling alone stop you if you want to go. The stigma is gone in Paris. Mm. There are many singles in the bars that I've reviewed. And most everyone in these fabulous bars are there to celebrate their day and to celebrate life. So when you're in Paris, treat yourself to one of these celebrated bars.
Listeners, are you still with us?
I want to go back. I'm going to hop a jet. Just preparing for this podcast and thinking about those bars and those great barmen and those great drinks and how just the everything is done with such focus and such passion, and it just flows. You know, it's not like forced in any way. I mean, it is. It's really as good as it gets.
Listeners, I can just hear you right now scrambling to get your suitcase out of the closet and get yourself to Paris. But before you do that, we probably know you would be well served by having a helpful packing list. Astrid has such a packing list. You can get your own copy of Astrid's complimentary packing list. It's right there on the homepage of her website, astridtravel.com. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, any of the finer places that podcasts can be found. While you're at any of those locations, please subscribe to this show. It helps other solo travelers find this information. We want them to know about all these elegant bars, don't we? These elegant lounges. This podcast, oh, I already did that. Thank you so much. Cheers. I feel a little tipsy from this show. I don't know why.
Well, I must say, my talk is getting a little tired of talking, but I loved it. And if you have any questions or anything about this particular podcast, or really any solo traveler questions, don't hesitate to comment or whatever. I'll get back with you.
Yeah, we want to hear from you. Go to the Ask Astrid section there on the podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Cheers. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or her solo travel advisors, visit her website, astridtravel.com.